Now, abolitionists and many Republicans made Fremont a hero because of this. They said, yes, this is what we should be doing. Strike at the slaveholders. But Lincoln said, no, you can't do this. He told Fremont to withdraw this order. Lincoln was afraid that it would have a pernicious effect in terms of the loyalty of the border states. He said to Fremont, you've gone way out in front. You can't do that. And so Fremont backed off. Many of the radical Republicans and the abolitionists in the North were very upset with Lincoln because he reined Fremont in. The same thing happened again in May of 1862 when a Union commander named David Hunter, who was in charge of a section of the South Atlantic coast, issued an order freeing all slaves in his department. It was called the Department of the South. It embraced parts of South Carolina and Georgia and Florida. He freed all the slaves in his department, David Hunter did. He didn't really have the power to make that stick, but he issued the order. Lincoln revoked that order as well. He said that only I, the president, have the power to issue that kind of a proclamation or order. You do not have that power. Once again, abolitionists and radical Republicans roundly condemned Lincoln for this, as they had when he revoked Fremont's earlier order in Missouri. The point is that there are generals in the field who are against slavery, and they're using their positions as commanders on the scene to try to strike at the institution of slavery. Butler did it quite effectively and, in fact, put in place a policy that was carried out by many other commanders, not sending back the slaves who came into your lines. Remember, Stone, the officer who got in trouble at Ball's after Ball's Bluff, had sent slaves back when they came into his lines. He was a Democratic general doing that. Here's a Republican general taking the opposite approach. So there are generals who are making their presence felt. Congress, of course, also contributed to this halting march toward emancipation. Let's look at some of their anti-slavery measures in 1861 and 1862. Shortly after Ben Butler made his contraband statement on the peninsula, Congress passed what was called the First Confiscation Act, August 6, 1861. The First Confiscation Act stipulated that owners of slaves engaged in military service for the Confederacy forfeited their ownership of those slaves. That is, slaves who were directly helping the Confederate war effort, digging trenches or fortifications, acting as teamsters in some support role with the army. They have to be directly involved in the Confederate military effort. But if you were a slave owner and you had slaves who were doing those kinds of things, your slaves could be confiscated by the United States government. This was an early step toward emancipation. In March of 1862, Congress prohibited the use of military power to return escaped slaves to their masters. That had been up in the air, as we've seen before. Some would be returned, some wouldn't. Here Congress says, no, you will not return slaves to their masters. Now, what this didn't clear up was the status of those slaves. All right, we make our way to Union lines if we're slaves. We're not going to be sent back, but this law doesn't say that we're free. It just says that we won't be sent back. So it left that part of the puzzle uncompleted. That act of March 1862 was a clear response to the fact that many, many black slaves were making their way to Union lines. Again, this is support for the notion of self-emancipation. In April 1862, Congress abolished slavery in the District of Columbia with compensation to the owners. So if you're a slave owner, you lose slaves in the District of Columbia, you're compensated monetarily for that loss. June 19, 1862, Congress emancipated all slaves in the territories without compensation. Congress had the power to kill slavery in the territories because, unlike the states, where it was considered under the Constitution, slavery was a domestic institution, Congress doesn't have power over the states there, but over the federal territories, Congress does have power, and slavery is ended there in June of 62. That, of course, fulfilled that Republican plank from the election of 1860, which had said no more slavery in the territories. That's finally taken care of in June of 62.